When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to mandate. Get it on. Welcome to Castrol CarCast, brought to you by Castrol. Why not? And Geico as well. You can go to geico.com. I'm Adam Kroll. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea over there.
Hello.
What's going on, man?
Oh, you know, I know we're going to get into all kinds of good car stuff, but I'll tell you, last night we went to the Burbank theater here and we watched Not Taco Bell Material, your first stand-up comedy special filmed in a theater. And I'll tell you, that's the way to see it. It's so much fun. Yeah. Seeing it there with an audience and a great job on that, by the way. And I know that's coming out on, you can get it on chassis and all that stuff. But if you can get into one of these like tug screenings, I would say definitely do that.
It really is a much better way to effective. I'll just use your word effective, not like good or funny or something. Yeah. It's a more, if you think about, thank you. If you think about what you're trying to achieve, like you go, I'm going to watch someone's hour long, or in this case, 72 minute long stand up special. And you go, okay, why are you doing that? And you go, because I'd like to laugh and I'd like to enjoy myself and maybe forget about some of the worries in life and laugh along a little bit.
Yeah.
You go, okay, well, if that's your goal, then watching it at home on your phone or your computer is fine. But if your goal is to really sort of absorb all of it, it's a much more visceral, enjoyable experience to watch it in the theater.
And even if there's a bit or a story or something that you told, somebody might have heard this before on the podcast or in the book, it's still different. It's so much more fun to see it with the crowd, see it on the big screen, get everybody's reaction to it. So if you get a chance to do that, it's you should go see it in one of these tug screenings. If you don't, then invite 15 people over to your house and have a big viewing party, because it's fun with a crowd.
It is. And
Nate and I have seen it multiple times, and you know, I've seen it live when you were developing the show as well, Adam. Still a few guffaws for me and Nate in the front row. Like, they're just it hits differently when you're seeing it that
way. It is. Yeah, it was fun. Anyway, good job. And it was fun to go to. So thanks for inviting me.
Agreed. And thank you. And you can get it at iTunes as well. And it's going to drop
March
on
5th?
Tuesday. But you just pre-order it and it'll be waiting for you. I guess that's how it works, right, Max Patty?
You can pre-order it now, and then you'll own it forever. Also, it'll be available for rent on March 5th as well.
Yeah. And my goal with this thing is for you guys to watch it and share it. It's not really to make money off it, although that would be nice, but I would like it to be seen by as many people as can see it. So it's a little less about money and a little more about viewership.
Yeah, it's good.
It'll be less than $5 to rent, so says Max Pata. Ed Justice Jr. is going to come in here in a minute. Justice Brothers, a great photographer as well.
Oh, yeah.
And an all-around car guy. There's a handful of guys that are just sort of perennial all-stars at all these car events and all these things, and Ed Justice is one of them. Ed Justice Jr., I should say. I was walking... I don't think I told you about this, moderator, but I was walking Phil down the sidewalk yesterday, and Phil, he has certain stretches where he just has to stop every 5 feet and sniff things. And when he sniffs things, he gets into this mode where he gets all four paws planted, yeah. and then he just leans low and goes hard. And you can pull as hard as you want.
He's not moving.
He's not moving. And then he makes this weird grunting sound when you pull him, because you're essentially choking him because you're just pulling him. But he doesn't move.
Yeah.
And so I was out front walking him down Foothill Boulevard yesterday. It was about noon or something. And some dude just comes out of the real estate office we're passing in front of. And he's like, "Hey, man, what's going on at the Peterson on the 10th? And I'm like, "Oh, we're doing a car thing." He's like, I heard about that. And I'm like, "Yeah, man, what do you got?" And he's like, "I got a 89 Porsche Carrera."
Nice.
And I said, "Well, bring it and come on down. It's Sunday. It'll be, well, I guess as you hear this, it'll be a week from tomorrow, right? If you hear, or mm-hmm. well, when's this come out? Saturday?
Yeah, week from tomorrow.
Week from tomorrow. Friday. Yeah, so the 10th. And we're going to be down there. Leno's going to be down there. Who all is going to be down there?
Yeah, so we've still got some guys confirming, but Leno's going to be there. Mike Brewer from Wheeler Dealers is going to be there. Chris Jacobs from Discovery Channel, Velocity and Motor Trend, he's going to be down there.
Let me ask this about that.
The Mopar guy, Goldberg.
Chris Jacobs, he's ubiquitous. I met him a couple times. Nice guy.
Yeah.
There's a commercial they used to run for like Motor Trend or something. And it's like all the guys, you know, this is my car. This is my Escape or whatever. And he's with a 911 SC.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, I think all these guys, I think it's their car.
Yeah. He has the 911.
Okay.
He's also a Mopar guy.
All right. A lot of range. Yeah. Is he going to bring, so far everyone's bringing a Porsche.
No, he's bringing a Mopar.
Okay.
I think a GTX.
I'll tell you what I'm in the midst of doing is modifying the Hino BRE transport truck to hold probably the BRE 510. I know it's a little mix and match because that thing would transport the Roadster,
right.
But I think I think people would rather see the 510.
Yeah, 510 is cool.
And it's BRE. And I'm doing it in such a way where the car is going to be rolled out of the back of the Hino, probably about 6 feet or so. So two-thirds of the car is exposed. So you can kind of see it in the Hino and out of the Hino, 5 feet above the ground.
Right. It's going to come straight out.
Straight out.
The Hino is high up, so it comes straight out on like ramps or something. But then those ramps will have legs.
Right, so we'll sort of have it displayed as, we'll have it Hino and the BRE 510 sort of displayed together.
Yeah.
So you guys can check that out.
Yeah, I took a couple pictures of the Hino. It's been under the cover since I think Monterey, you know, with the weather and everything, it makes sense. I took some pictures and I posted it up on Instagram, and all you guys that follow it, man, that's got to be the most popular post I have made. And there's been more likes and more comments about the Hino than anything. I know you guys keep asking for more. They're like, where's the, you know, we want to see the inside. So I did another post of the inside, but it's just got, I don't know, where are we up to, like 500 and something likes on that, which is pretty high for what I normally post.
It's a bitchin' piece.
Yeah, there's some interior.
Let's
right-hand drive.
Let's be honest. It's a really bitchin' piece. I it's funny. I obviously I'm a sports car guy and a race car guy, but when I walk up on that Hino and just see the way it sits and the way it looks, I go, that's bitching.
Yeah, somebody actually even commented and said, "Did you guys lower it? Does it sit that way?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think we changed the suspension at all."
No,
that's it.
Our next move is we're gonna sort of do phase two where we got like the stereo system cranking and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
In there, we should work that out. So we got
some of it installed, like the head units in there, and there's some speakers and stuff in there. I think
we should discuss, because
I don't know if there's any external speakers.
It'd be fun if we had some cool Herb Alpert music or something playing.
Yeah.
Some period correct stuff playing as that thing was sitting there.
Yeah. So people have also commented, like, what are you going to do with the paint scheme? It's, you know, the white with the red stripes in the front. Now, are we going to do a livery? Are we going to do a wrap or whatever? And, you know, we have a big banner that promotes the brands, the Corolla drinks and chassis and stuff that we hang off the side, which is great. And we'll probably have that at the Peterson show. But I don't know, like maybe down the road, like we've got this Corolla Racing brand. You can get the shirts, you can get the hats, maybe do a little bit of that up on there. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of a kind of BRE stripe to it.
It's a blank
Corolla
canvas.
Racing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big blank canvas and it looks fantastic, but it is so funky cool. Like when you guys come out to the show, we're trying to bring it. We're just trying to figure out how to get it in the building because, you know, it's kind of big. And can we get it on the roof or not? Or do we put it in the downstairs entrance of the garage? You know, like the lobby entrance of the Peterson garage, maybe put it down there. But if you guys come out to the March 10th show.
Yeah, and we'll be walking around and we'll be totally accessible. And Leno will be there walking around. And I think Danny Trejo's
coming. Do we know what he's bringing? I don't know what he's bringing.
I just got another email today from... What Mike August does is he just sends me emails. Here's what I need you to do. I need to talk to Michael Mann. Tell him we want to write that Ferrari script. Oh, and tell Leno we need to, and tell Seth MacFarlane we need to, and then you got to tell Jimmy to tell Seth MacFarlane to tell Michael Mann.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, okay, okay, yeah. Okay. I get it. I do 1,000 shows a day and.
Yeah, that'd be nice if all that stuff could just happen easily.
Tell Jay. Yeah, there's a lot of tell Jay. Like, I don't know. Sometimes Jay doesn't listen to me every single time he says tell Jay.
We did a phone conference with Mike this morning, and he's like, how come we don't know what Jay's bringing? I was like, I don't know, probably because he's got hundreds of cars, and he's just going to pick on the morning of.
Yeah.
You know, he's just going to grab whatever the hell he wants and then just do it.
I'll send him a gentle reminder, and we'll see.
Danny Trejo's bringing a lowrider.
What?
Yeah. I'm trying to get... Oh, man, I'm trying to get our buddy Billy Gibbons out there so we can get two lowriders.
Mm-hmm.
Billy's trying to figure out, like, with the wife and what her schedule is. Like, come on, Billy, come out and do this. You know? Oh, and I got a voicemail from our buddy Steve Strope. And Steve Strope's going to be coming out and bringing a car.
Yeah, I sent speaking of Strope, you have to remind me, I sent an email out to Joe Rogan, who's got a few... At least one, probably two Strope cars.
Yeah, Strope and Icon, I think. Maybe he's got a Jonathan Moore.
I don't know if I have
built.
Joe's right email because he hasn't answered me, but we shall see. Max Pata, make a note. Let's hit Strope. Tell Strope to tell Joe if he's in town on the 10th, bring out like a Strope car to the event.
Yeah, Joe just mentioned you on his podcast too, so you're on his mind.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh.
He had Alex Jones on, and Alex was talking about, do you know anybody who's like an independent broadcaster that built his own audience? And you were the first and only guy that came out of Jones.
Oh. All right. Well, we'll see. Anyway, we'll get Strope, who's a good dude, and Joe's a good dude, and we'll go through Strope to get to Joe. I'm not sure if I have his updated information. But anyway... It's shaping up.
Email Mike August and go, Mike, this is what you got to do.
Here's what you need to do.
You need to go get Joe Rogan's contact info.
Mike's the best.
Mike's out of date.
No, Mike said, I saw Mike last night at Kimmel's. Mike's miserable, right? Because he's got to go to Cats, right? He's got to go to Cats and the musical. And Mike's like, so... His wife is dragging him to a musical, and he hates musicals. And he's like, there's so much singing. And I'm like, that's what they do. And
it's
he's like,
musical.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, does it ever end? And I'm like, no, it's a musical. And he's like, but they sing everything. And I'm like, that's how musicals work.
Yeah.
And he's like, I would enjoy them if they didn't sing.
Well, it's like listening to the podcast. There's so much talking. Why is there so much talking?
Yes.
It's like, because that's all there is. Like, what are you going to do? Just be quiet?
So poor Mike is miserable. They had to go to Cats, but he's miserable. He hates all musicals because they sing. And I'm like, well,
it is the one thing that's consistent among all musicals.
I was going to say, it's got the word music right in it. But I happen to like musicals. That's me. I'm going against type. All right. Why don't we get Ed Justice Jr. in here? I'll tell you guys about Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of their performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep metal apart and fight power robbing friction to unlock exhilarating performance. three times stronger Fool than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. They did a test. It's the Kurt Orban. I'd like to get that guy with Lake Speed.
Yeah.
Talk viscosity.
Battle Royale.
Battle Royale. Yeah. Castrol Edge formulated with fluid titanium technology.
Yeah. Castrol I'm going to be due for the oil change in the M3 because it takes a little extra now because what it does is it pumps oil out of the oil pan into the supercharger, and then it kind of mists it onto the gears, and then it gravity feeds way back to the pan, and you got to put a little extra in there, or the oil light will come on and be like, "Hey, you're a little low."
Well, get it going. Get some Castrol. Ed Justice Jr. in studio. The book, which is a whopper, The Legacy of Justice, an American Family Story. It's available now on Amazon, and you can bookmark us and click to our site. I have this thing in my
giant
hand
book.
Right now.
It's it's a load-bearing wall, Adam. You're construction type guy. You spent a lot of years of your life. And
I did.
That's a load-bearing wall.
I would drop a Paralam right on this bad boy.
That's right.
And put a few joist hangers on it and pick up that load. Yeah, it is a big, colorful, beautiful book. And so many vintage old pictures and so many new pictures. And what a family to be born into. Incredible. It's just an incredible legacy.
Guy. You know, you can't, you know, the old joke, you can't pick your family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that generally is meant to be a negative statement. It wasn't in mine. You know, it's like Uncle Fred. Yeah. Yeah, old Uncle Fred.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Thanksgiving's coming up again. Okay, great.
Where did the Justice brothers start? What was the very beginning and where were
you? Your dad and his brother?
I had two uncles, three brothers,
okay.
Totally. One of them is sort of forgotten, just a quick side note, because he got paralyzed in an auto wreck at 21, paraplegic from the waist down. And so he wasn't as visible as my dad and my Uncle Zeke. But they started in south of Kansas City. They Midwestern guys, born 60 miles south of Kansas City in a little town by the name of Paola, Kansas. Sounds like an old radio deal or a bad politician or something. But it's an Indian name. And throughout the Midwest, there are all sorts of Indian tribal names and all that. And the town was about 1,500 population. Had a town square just like the Music Man. I mean, it was Americana. And they were living vicariously through Popular Mechanics and some of the magazines that were around at that time because, you know, all the automotive magazines that we have known weren't around pre-war. And my dad, there's a picture in the book. It's a two-page spread of their bedroom wall. And it's an amazing photo that we actually have, and I'll tell you how that happened. But it shows all these race car pictures hanging on their wall, like maybe, you know, I know that's the way my bedroom was. And they were ingesting this stuff, and all my dad kept seeing, being the youngest of six and the youngest of the brothers, was these California images with palm trees, the movie stars, the custom cars, everybody driving year-round, and then looking out the window in the wintertime and seeing his little midget that they built in their teen years, early teens, under a snowbank. And my dad, you know, just he couldn't get to California fast enough. And that there are certain things that just were big turning points. You know, in your life, things happen. You don't know why, but you look back and, you know, that was critical. I went right rather than left. And, you know, I call my dad and my uncle sort of like the Forrest Gump deal. You know, in the movie, Forrest always just sort of like is there when history's happening. And this was the way their life was. It was really rather amazing.
It's funny as I think about it, and it's so poetic and sort of, I mean, I know there's always a lot of work involved, but I wonder if today's instant gratification world and sort of computer on demand and everything where, you know, it's like, well, I want to go take a virtual tour of the hotel room before I go there, or I want to go take a virtual campus tour before I get on a plane, or I don't have to get on a plane, or what shall be there before all the computers and all the virtual tours and all this sort of everything, there's a big chunk of life called mystery. And it was like, I'm going to find out, like, this is a blind date. I'm not going on a computer and getting all her stats and a high def picture of this broad. We're just going to meet and we'll see.
Yeah.
And it was of course it meant for disappointment, but it also meant for sort of wanderlust. Like, I don't know. We're going to find out. And I don't know. I feel like our kids are being robbed of everything on demand and no more. Hey, man, we're going to have to find out where the road takes us.
Yeah. Who knows?
I agree with you. I mean, you could say that sounds like an old guy rant, but the fact of the matter, it's a perspective rant. Because it's really true. My dad and my uncles were fearless. I mean, they feared nothing, really. I mean, they were risk takers. When you consider, in the book is the story about how they left from building race cars, literally right down the street from where we are here, and working for Frank Curtis, one of the greatest American race car builders ever, fabricators. And decided to sell a product that had been introduced by a 76-year-old man, and this is in the late 40s, which is like 120 by current age, you know.
Right.
And take this unknown product to the other side of the United States, which they had never been to the state of Florida. They'd never been to Florida. Settle in Jacksonville, Florida. My mom was 6 months pregnant, and they had no savings. And like my dad said, he said, you know, a lot of people said I was an aggressive salesperson. But he said, if having to put food on the table for my family, and there were three families, the three brothers, and one of them paralyzed, he said, then I was aggressive. And so, you know, they had to make it happen. They never backed away from a challenge.
What was that first product?
It was Wins Friction Proofing Oil, which is a real mouthful of a name. And when you'd go in to sell that, the guy in the South would say, I don't need roofing oil.
Right.
And they go, no, it's friction proofing oil.
Yeah.
Even Wins is a weird one to pronounce when you read it.
Was your dad selling other people's products before? What was the sort of the timeline of creating?
Yeah,
Justice Brothers is a huge manufacturer of lubricants.
My dad was always been the spark plug, the pusher of the family.
Yeah,
for whatever reason, being the youngest, whatever, we'll let psychologists figure that one out. But he could see the handwriting on the wall. They were building so many of these little midget race cars, which is the most popular form of racing right after World War II.
Yeah, and you've got a great collection of those,
thank
by the
you,
way.
Yeah.
You've got the collection of those.
With the world's largest. Like I tell people, I don't know what that means.
It's 500 square feet, but it's fine. Yeah,
the world's largest midget car collection.
Car collection.
That's like a George Carlin joke. But anyway.
Jumbo shrimp.
Yeah, right. So anyway, my dad could see the handwriting on the wall, and they stumbled onto this product that was brand new, unknown. And they became the first distributors for it. They couldn't stay in California because Chestine Wynn, a retired attorney who was the guy they dealt with, had a next door neighbor that he felt obligated to give California to, even though he would be the second guy in the door. Tremendous man, Bill Klesick was his name, and so we went down there. We actually then came back to California. My dad, the entire 10 years that we were in Florida, he wanted to get back to California. Bill Klesick, at a meeting of the distributors one evening, got a little bit inebriated, and he was very, very disgruntled about dealing with the Carl Wynn, mm-hmm. the founder's son, who had his dad committed.
That was the old gentleman who came up with the product in the first place.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's not in the book because it's not necessary. But anyway, so my dad made Bill in just a, like, I'm really upset statement. If somebody offered me X, I'd sell my company and I'd get the H out of here.
Yeah.
And my dad said, are you serious about that? And he says, I am dead serious. And my dad says, okay. Zeke, Gus, and I will buy it. He goes across the street, rings up my two uncles and says, hey, I got something very important to tell you. We just bought California. And Tom Madigan tells the story very well. They basically said, are you crazy? We don't have this money that you have just committed to buy this. No. And my dad says, I know that. But he says, we will figure out a way to make this happen. And, you know, there are no problems, only solutions, or there's a solution for every problem. And he was also a guy, don't cross that bridge till you get there. You know, he would never pontificate about, well, God, if this happens, that happens. He didn't care. And that was the way I was raised. You know, I mean, we'll deal with it when it comes up, okay? Yeah.
Do you remember the amount that sold for?
$50,000, which was a lot of money.
Yeah. Sure.
This was 1956.
Yeah. Matt, you're supposed to chime in and go, still is, but I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, but it's true. It's true.
A lot. No,
anyway, they came out, and then when there was a brand of product out here called Max Number 13, and it was a radiator additive, and it was very big, and it was located over in Highland Park. And but we didn't have a product. Winds did not have a product to compete with that. And so my dad and uncles went to Wynn Oil Company. Carl Wynn says, look, we need a product like this. We're never going to break into this market the way we should, because another brand of product, Bardol, had beaten down Wynn's in this Southern California market.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Bardol was very big in the late 50s.
And you can see the sticker. Close your eyes.
Yeah.
See those stickers?
Yeah, I don't see it.
Oh, they're everywhere.
Yeah. So anyway, they said, no, we don't want to make that product. For who knows? They, you know, they really weren't car people.
Right.
And so they, we don't make this product, Carl Wynn said. And they kept badgering him. He said, look, I'll tell you what. We'll sign an agreement that changes your agreement that says you can't make this product. We'll sign a separate agreement that says you can make this product if you guys want to make it. I don't think that was a smart decision, but whatever. I mean, that was their decision. And so that's when the first Justice Brothers product came out. And then about 10 years later, Wynn's wanted to, Carl Wynn and Wes Bellwood, the president of the company at that time, wanted to take Wynn Oil Company public. And in order to do that, they wanted to terminate distributorships. And so they systematically started terminating distributors, Justice Brothers included. But what's told in the book that has never been talked about before is Carl Wynn's son, Cliff, was very good friends with my dad and my uncles, and he loved them. I mean, he saw what you know, because we won Indy in 1950, put the product on the map. We paid for the sponsorship. And he happened to hear a conversation between his dad and Wes Bellwood one night with this master plan. And he got my dad and uncles off to the side privately. And he didn't get along with his dad, too. That's another factor I need to tell you. And he told him. I hate to tell you this, guys.
Wow, he dropped a dime on his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder, I bet my son would do that.
I saw that in Billions. I saw that whole thing play out.
I know, it's like a Hollywood movie, but it's true. But we knew the handwriting was on the wall. And so as good as we could prepare for it, we did. We had 75 delivery vehicles on the road here in Southern California, Corvair vans.
Corvair vans.
I promise you, I think we had the largest fleet of Corvair vans,
the only fleet of Corvair vans.
Yeah, no one else said
but you know what?
Yeah, nobody had that.
You don't realize it, but there was no Ford van at that time. There was a panel truck,
right.
And the only other van was Volkswagen, which really they called a station wagon when it was introduced.
If you wanted a van, it had to be air-cooled.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, as I was thumbing through the book, I think what a lot of people, younger people especially, who listen will get out of this book is you have no idea how much of this took place in Southern California and how sort of impossible it would be to do now with all the regulations and everything. But the notion that so much of that manufacturing and innovation and products were centered, I mean, everything from moon up the street here to Shelby over in Venice and yeah. and everything in between. Like Max Velchowski was like, I don't know where he was, right on Sunset or something.
Yep, in Hollywood. Like,
I mean, you don't think of Hollywood and Sunset and yep. West LA and the San Fernando Valley. You think of that as like food trucks and Mac Apple stores and yeah. stuff. It was bunch of hardcore wrenching engineering
oh, yeah.
products, innovative fabrication, crazy, all from here. And it's just, I don't know if there's any other place like it because, you know, other places did, well, we did shipbuilding and now we have retail or whatever. But this was far and wide the biggest place on the planet in terms of so many guys, so many Shelby guys. I mean, there was the Reventlo.
Yeah, the Scarab.
The Scarab guys. I mean, everyone's like, I'm gonna get 3,000 square foot and build my own car.
Yeah, yeah. Troutman and Barnes. That was another group.
Yeah, yeah the
and then old school like the part manufacturer guys like Edelbrock and oh, yeah. Iske
and All American Racers, which thankfully they're still here. Dan Gurney's All American Racers.
Gurney's mm-hmm. yeah. making parts for this. Elon Musk shuttle and stuff yeah, like it's right. crazy up in there. Yeah, it's insane. And then yeah, except for old Yeller, I don't like that car.
You know, it's funny, Adam.
That car scared me.
What you say is absolutely true. I hate to say I have to agree with you because the state of California has done an award winning job of dismantling industry in the state and turning it into primarily a service industry state. Which, as one professor in college explained to me, you never generate the profits, the capital from service industry that you can by actually building a product. And England is a service industry economy, and they show the signs of that and the problems with that. In order to really make money and to employ a lot of people, you've got to have the margin that you can generate by making a product for X and then the value of the product being that much higher. You know, when it comes down to service, it's so much an hour. And
yeah.
That's it.
Or, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of got this lesson early because when my dad worked at a place called 5 Acres, it's like essentially an orphanage when I was young in Altadena. And like, I remember every year he'd be like, oh, we got to go try to get more money. And I'd be like, yeah, you have to go get more money because your clients are kids that have been thrown out of their house. Like they're 11 year olds who smoke. They're not, they're not paying you.
Yeah.
And I know you have to have that element in society. You have to have hospitals for veterans and things and orphanages and all that kind yeah. of stuff. But what I'm saying is I learned real quick, like, hey, that my dad's yeah. never going to get paid.
It's a terrible business model if you think about
it. He doesn't have his clients don't have money. They don't pay him. So right. I was yeah. like, all he can do is rattle the can once a year and see if he can get a little money in it to keep the lights on over there. So I always thought to myself, I want to go into a profession where it's not based on clients that don't have money. that's tough.
Well, yeah. you know, it's like your past construction. The developer makes a lot of money. The stonemason is X, right?
Well, look, the way the construction business works and like the construction site works is the people that do the hardest work, the labor, that literally digging ditches all day, they get paid the least. Yeah. And then it just kind of goes up the chain to yeah. the guy who shows up with a tie and a long sleeve shirt, smoking a cigar and puts a chrome hard hat on and takes a spin around the thing, that guy gets paid the most and does the least physical
yeah.
labor. So it's insane though when, you know, people go like, oh, why is that guy? He's working harder than anybody. Yeah, he is, but we don't need him. We yeah. can replace him. Look, when I worked at McDonald's, I was working harder than anybody over that grill. I still got $3 an hour.
I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Man, I tell you what, slip and slide, man, on the floor. I mean, and I opened the store with a good friend of mine, George Haynes, who went on to become the general manager of Santa Anita Racetrack. And I'll never forget that. George stayed on a long time. And where he made his real money at KFC was cutting the chickens. You know, I had a big blade and you'd cut the pieces and you got paid per chicken. And so, you know, if you're a hustler and, you know, and he did it and he still had all of his fingers at the end of the day. You know?
Wow.
Why did you work at KFC when you come from a family that
well, because you know what? Okay. You know, it's funny. First of all, my dad was a tough guy. I mean, I worked in every single position in our company. I've worked in the warehouse as a kid. I worked on the production line a lot. And the worst thing you can be when you're working out in the shop floor, the production line, is be the son of the owner.
I bet.
Trust me. Yeah. Just not like, hey, if I treat him right, maybe I'll get a promotion. Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, you got to earn your way. And, you know, I mean, I look back at that and my dad obviously realized that. And it was good. I mean, same thing true with my daughters. They haven't worked on the production line, but they've done a lot of other things. Look, when you're a business owner, I think there's a certain benefit to really understanding everything. And, you know, I mean, I've pitched in and helped do a lot of things. I have no problem doing that. I mean, I have a great appreciation for the people on the production line. I know what they face. I've been there. And, you know, without them, we don't make a quality product. And, you know, the old adage, you're only as good as your weakest link, is true. I mean, you know, you talk about a fast food restaurant. Okay, we mentioned that. Whatever the brand, you have one guy that's the weakest link and he does some heinous act, particularly today, that'll hit the evening news and the whole chain is affected, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
especially these days.
Everybody counts. Everybody counts.
What, yeah. Back to the automotive world, are you coming out to the Peterson on the 10th with us?
March.
No. Yeah, you know, that told me you guys obviously are not going to Amelia Island this year.
Yeah. Now, first thing I said to, I hit Bruce Meyer and he's like, oh, I'm going to beat Amelia. And then I was like, oh, crap, we're doing this the weekend of Amelia Island.
Yeah, I blame Mike
August on this one. Yeah, so a lot of the hardcore dudes that go to Amelia every year will be out of town and will be left with the posers like me and Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
Yeah, Danny's great.
But with all of Bruce Meyer's cars.
Yeah.
We get to keep his cars over there.
Danny's great. He used to be around Alexis DeGioia's pit all the time when she was running the funny car. And we've used his catering at our place.
But, guy makes a hell of a taco.
You know, I'm a judge down there, as you know.
At Amelia.
Yeah, you brought a car down there, a beautiful car, one of your collection and all that.
You judged the category with Pete Brock and Tommy Kendall.
Tommy Kendall, right.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. See, what an all-star cast. And right after that, then I have to go to the Garlitz International Drag Racing Hall of Fame and accept the Founders Award for my dad, which is a really great honor.
So, in Florida?
Yeah, it's in Gainesville. It's because that weekend after Amelia is the Sebring 12-hour and the Gator Nationals drag race. You know, this time of the year in Florida, while it's not too cold and it's not blistering hot, they try to fit everything in. You know what I mean?
I don't know how you do it because you've got Justice Brothers Company to run, you and your daughters as well. But you're at every racing event. Justice Brothers sponsors every car on the planet and every racing event on the planet, it seems like. And then you're at every one of these events, and then you're shooting photos of everything. I don't know how you have time to do it all.
Well, you know, there was a guy I was exposed to when I was in college, and he had a list of like 100 things he wanted to do in his life. And it was like climb Kilimanjaro, go down the Zambezi. I mean, it was just a crazy list. And this guy was really checking it off, going, and it wasn't a bucket list. This is just, this is how he wanted to live his life. And while my list is not anything like that, that guy made a real impression on me. And, you know, I am blessed to do a lot of things I really like. And, you know, they say, find what you like in your life and it's never a job. I don't feel like I have a job. I mean, hey, some days are not so good. I mean, that's life. You know what I mean? You could sit at home and they're going to have a bad day, you know? But I just love everything I do. I don't feel like I go to work. Justice Brothers, we have an excellent staff. You can't do it without an excellent staff. You can't do anything. And, you know, nobody's a one-man band. Mm-hmm. You're the point man, you know, and going to the races. I mean, we do that to support the teams. Photography a little over 50 years has been a big part of my life. That's an obsession, an addiction, a passion. And I get just as much thrill out of taking a great motorsports picture today as I did, even though it's a lot easier today, frankly, than it used to be because autofocus and all that. But that's made it a little bit tougher than to stand out from the rest of the crowd. Yeah. So
I got a last question for you. Sebring. We've been to a lot of events. I've never been to Sebring. Is Sebring still on where it was? I mean, still on the airfield? And yeah, have they modified? You know, it used to be airfield, hay bales. You know, that was
yeah,
about it.
They've modified it, but it is clearly the roughest race course in the world. You know, because the panelization of the cement and all that. Like, you know, the Pasadena Freeway would be a similar comparison, you know.
Well,
although it's even worse than that.
We do the, God, what island? When do we used to do out here? Sorry, I'm
Coronado.
Sandy, a Coronado.
Coronado.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coronado was that kind of a miniature version of that. Just flat and bumpy.
Palm Springs,
weird.
They did the same thing too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Coronado was weird because similar to like Long Beach Grand Prix, when they sort of makeshift a track, there's no real like runoff or anything. It's just concrete barrier. So, you know, you make a little bit of mistake and there's damage to the car. There's you know, you're
keep you honest.
Yeah.
Apparently.
We're very aware of that. All right, tell us about Geico.
Yeah, Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off dry cleaning, you pick up some milk, and now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. You don't have to pick up or drop off anything. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Check out Geico.com.
Okay, you can get Not Taco Bell material, and you can pre-order my stand-up special at Chassis, 2S's and a Y.com. We've got a lot of really good product there, a lot of good racing stuff and car movies and lots of docs and all that. Again, the 10th, if you're not going to be at Amelia Island, you should definitely be with us over at the Peterson.
Yeah, if you celebrating. Go to the peterson.org website, and the tickets that are for sale there, I believe we have a few tickets left, and you can get a private tour of your collection, Adam, here Sunday morning before the Peterson event. This Peterson event starts at 2, so you can come here in the morning. I'll be here. Maybe you'll be here. We'll do a tour of that, and then when you get to the Peterson, it'll also include a vault tour, private vault tour.
Vault. That is excellent.
So you can get a special ticket for that.
I got live shows coming up in Brea and Denver, and just go to adamcarolla.com/events. Ed Justice Jr., the book, man, and it is a substantial book, The Legacy of Justice, an American Family Story. It's available on Amazon as we speak, and shoot Ed something over at edjusticejr.com. That is the website. Ed, always great to see you.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much.
Say,
you know that.
Say hi to all our friends at Amelia. We'll say hi to some of your friends at at the Peterson. Check out Shift and Steer, available on iTunes at Podcast One. And until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Ed Justice Jr. and Matt the Motorator D'Andrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
With With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.